Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Today we're going to talk to one of our very favorite experts. He's a go-to guy in a wide variety of subjects on something that, if it doesn't yet concern you, it should concern you. It's age-related macular degeneration. It is one of the leading causes of blindness. And you may think, well, no, I don't have macular degeneration, so this doesn't concern me. Think again, because a very high percentage of Americans, if they live long enough, will have a high risk of developing visual loss due to macular degeneration. It's a serious problem, and it's a problem that really illustrates how a lifestyle approach, diet, exercise, and supplements can make a huge difference in outcomes in this particular condition. It's really sort of a model for natural intervention. And today we're going to talk to an expert. He's Dr. Thomas Gwilliams. He earned his doctorate from the Medical College of Wisconsin, where he studied molecular immunology. And he is vice president of science and regulatory affairs for Orthomolecular Products. We carry many of their products at the Hoffman Center. They're excellent products, very, very pure and potent and designed for clinical application. Tom teaches also at the University of Wisconsin School of Pharmacy. He's a clinical instructor there and at the University of Minnesota School of Pharmacy. And he lectures widely to health professionals on subjects related to nutrition. Previously, we talked to him about omega-3 fatty acids. We talked to him about immunity. We've talked to him about adrenal function. And lately, he's turned his attention to age-related macular degeneration. So if you thought you knew everything about macular degeneration, yeah, lutein, zeaxanthin, zinc, think again, because there's a lot more to know about it. We're going to share that with you in today's segment. So welcome. Tom, it's a pleasure having you back on Intelligent Medicine.
Well, it is great to be back with you.
Thank you so much. So give us the scope of the problem. How big a problem is this for Americans?
Well, when we think of age-related macular degeneration, or AMD, well, as you mentioned, it's one of the leading causes of blindness in older individuals, and it's accumulating. So as we know with many lifestyle diseases, it's accumulating. We're seeing more and more prevalence of this, and the National Eye Institute estimates that there may be about 7.3 million Americans substantially at risk for increasing risk for AMD. And of course, globally, you know, we're talking hundreds of millions of people. So obviously age is part of it, because we think of age related, but it's also very much lifestyle related, and that's why it's increasing at a rapid rate.
So there are two basic types of macular degeneration, and paradoxically, the type that is less common is more likely to cause blindness. Can you explain that?
So yeah, these are, so let's just think about, if for those who aren't maybe as aware of what macular degeneration is, the macula is the center part of the retina, which is the part of the back of the eye that converts light into, you know, energy, so we can convert that into what we see, or what our brain sees. And obviously that tissue is affected in a couple different ways, and the two different definitions or way that we describe this is, one's called wet macular degeneration and one is called dry. And essentially we'll explain why they're called wet and dry here in a minute, but the dry form is the more prevalent form. Maybe 80 to 90% of people with AMD have the dry form, but it's a very slow, progressive process where little bumps form on the back of the eye to try to deal with the damage of light and oxygen. But the wet form, which is maybe only 10% of the individuals that with AMD have the wet form, that's a very aggressive form of the disease, that what we call neovascularization. That's where new blood vessels form in the eye, and this can happen within months, certainly within a year, and you can go from having really no issues to having this these blood vessels form. They cause swelling and edema, and that distorts the retina, and that, of course, then immediately distorts the vision. So while the dry form is more prevalent, the wet form is actually the cause of more blindness because of its aggressive nature.
And there's no medical therapy for the dry form other than the nutritional therapy, which we'll get into. But there is a medical therapy for the wet form. Can you tell us what that is?
So we know that one of the signals that is like in some cancer tissue, actually, where you have this neovascularization, there's a growth factor called VEGF, vascular endothelial growth factor. And VEGF is one of the signals that the cells, the stressed out cells, the oxidative burden cells send out, and that causes the neovascularization, the immediate problem that we see with wet AMD. And there are drugs, there are anti-VEGF antibodies which can be injected into the eye that is now approved as a treatment, and it can be very successful in many individuals. The unfortunate thing is it's extremely expensive, and oftentimes is a monthly injection, so it's not really a pleasant therapy, but it can be, and it's an expensive therapy, but it can be very helpful in those cases where people have wet AMD. So when we talk about the use of lifestyle and dietary supplements to slow AMD, we're mostly talking about dry form, although people with advancing dry form are also at risk for the wet form, because the precursor to the wet form is also the same process of damage within the retina.
So in other words, there is no targeted therapy for wet macular degeneration that is as proven a track record as there is for the dry form. However, one might not be ill-advised, if they were to have the wet form, to take some of the supplements and follow some of the lifestyle recommendations that are applicable to the dry form, correct?
Right. So I would certainly think that, and we do have evidence that many of the lifestyle factors affect both wet and dry, but when it comes to the therapies that we're going to talk about, specifically with nutrients, those have been studied in the dry form, and certainly people with wet AMD should be talking to their doctor about potentially using anti-VEGF therapy, which is obviously a drug model.
Okay, so let's take a look at the retina and what it's made up of. The retina does a lot of work, right? I mean, it takes there's this physical energy of light that hits the eye, and then it's converted into nerve impulses. And this is a highly active, energy-dependent part of the body. A lot of stuff is going on there. In effect, as you describe in a recent article that you wrote on this, it's as if the retina kind of gets fried by all that metabolic activity.
Right. So I mean, if you look at the retina, I mean, it's a very condensed layer of a number of different cells, and that are highly orchestrated to convert light into basically an energy impulse that leaves through a series of neurons, eventually into the optic nerve, which then goes into the visual cortex and sort of projects, onto a chemical screen to basically decide what you're interpreting as what you're seeing. And that, we're talking being able to interpret the intensity of light, the wavelength of the light, all of that information has to be converted using photoreceptors, most people know as rods and cones. Those basically use light, convert it into a chemistry, which then converts it into a nerve impulse. And all of that creates all kinds of free radicals. Not only are there free photons floating around because light's coming in, and we know how light can damage, even like, park your car in the same place every day, and, one side's going to get faded and the other side's not. So you know how damaging light can be, but that conversion of light into electrical impulses creates a lot of reactive oxygen species, a lot of oxidative damage, And not surprisingly, one of the highest concentrations of antioxidants are then also in the eye. So that tells you that this tissue is already geared up for the potential for damage.
Right. Also, the eye is rich in an omega-3 fatty acid called DHA, according to your article. And it's almost as if the eye eats up DHA, because you write that 10% of the DHA-rich photoreceptors in the eyes are shed and regenerated daily. So it's kind of like this turnover where the DHA gets used up. Well, what happens if someone doesn't have any omega-3 fatty acids in their diet? I guess there's not a lot of DHA to help with repair.
Right. So you know, the eye, because of the need for the fluidity of the membranes that are in these discs that form the outer membrane of the photoreceptors, you know, in order to keep that fluidity, the longest, most polyunsaturated fatty acid, DHA, is used to basically maintain that membrane fluidity, and obviously that's where we see the highest concentrations of DHA in the body. So clearly the body is going to pull as much DHA from the rest of the body, leaving other areas vulnerable, eventually leaving the eye vulnerable as well. And so, yeah, this is one of the concerns and why obviously people are looking at DHA supplementation as being beneficial for these individuals.
And there are also unique pigments that reside in the eye. They're reddish, orange, colored pigments that are now familiar to users of eye supplements as lutein and zeaxanthin. So what do they do? What are they there for?
So these are carotenoids or a subset of carotenoids we call xanthophylls, and they come from the diet, you know, from a number of dietary sources. And as it turns out, they sort of stack themselves in the layer sort of between the photoreceptors and the lens, actually in the area where the neurons are, and they act as really two things. One, they act as a filter, so because of their color, they're able to filter out some of the blue light that comes in that the body doesn't necessarily use. It can't really see, like ultraviolet and other wavelengths that aren't really helpful to humans for seeing, but they can be very damaging. So they act as a filter.
In fact, it's like an internal sunglass, like internal sunglasses in a way.
I mean, right.
It's like
Go ahead. There actually is a sunglass company that's trying to mimic this and using, obviously, synthetic xanthophyll-type compounds in sunglasses for that reason. And, of course, the other thing, actually, there's a couple other things, but one of the other main things is that they themselves are antioxidants. So they're not just filtering light, but they're actually able to quench free radicals and perhaps even modulate some other things like the pathways that stimulate antioxidant production in the cells via what's called the NRF2 transcription factor pathways. So they're very active compounds, and they're highly concentrated in the eye. They concentrate in some other tissues as well, but they're really mostly concentrated in the eye. Ironically, beta carotene, which we often think of as a carotenoid that for eye health, does not go in. We really don't find high concentrations of beta carotene in the eye at all, which is kind of an irony that most people didn't know.
Right. And that also leads to some controversy about whether we should include beta carotene in an ideal eye supplement, which we'll get to in just a moment. But what happens to the eye when you don't consume enough fruits, vegetables, or eggs, I guess, are the only significant source of lutein and zeaxanthin that's from the animal kingdom, right? So people are sometimes these days using egg whites. They're fearful of egg yolks because they've been taught that they contain cholesterol, and then they don't eat enough fresh fruits and vegetables, which have these natural pigments in them. Can the body synthesize and make up for the dietary lack of these substances?
No, I mean, we don't. In fact, I was just recently talking to the people that are looking at the new dietary recommendations, and there's a whole discussion about the fact that there's no phytonutrients listed among the recommended absolute necessary intake like we do with vitamins and minerals, and one of the leading phytonutrients is lutein and zeaxanthin, particularly because we can't make it. And so the idea of, you know, putting a RDA level even of lutein and zeaxanthin is now being considered because of that.
Okay, and that they really are essential, which would actually lift them into the category of a vitamin. Vitamins, by definition, are essential nutrients that we have to obtain from outside as opposed to being able to synthesize them ourselves.
Right, right.
So what are the main dietary sources of lutein and zeaxanthin? And you have a nice chart. By the way, what I'm referring to here is a monograph that's put out by the Point Institute. This is something that you are the developer of, which is basically a research institute that puts out information about medical conditions and related dietary and lifestyle considerations, along with information about the impact of supplements. And the monograph is entitled Preventing and Treating Age-Related Macular Degeneration, Evidence for a Lifestyle and Nutrient Approach. So is that available to the general public or just to clinicians?
Well, it's available to clinicians. I guess let me give you the people that are distributing this is what's called the Lifestyle Matrix Resource Center, and you can get at their website at thelifestylematrix.com.
Okay.
Thelifestylematrix.com, and I think clinicians can get a copy from them, and I believe you can actually purchase it, like packets for patients, and then you can contact them to see if it's available to the general public.
Okay, great. But we're boiling.
At some point in the future, it will be a free download on the Point Institute website. It's just not available yet.
Okay, and that is the pointinstitute.org or pointinstitute.org?
Yes, it's pointinstitute.org.
Okay, great. Okay, so moving right along here, you list dietary sources of lutein and zeaxanthin, and there's some surprises here because, green leafy vegetables are a major source, but also eggs. So tell us about that.
Yeah, so eggs, I mean, obviously, the egg yolks, so it's not just, like you mentioned, not egg whites, egg yolks, and that's some of what gives the yellow color is the xanthophylls that are in the egg yolk. And for those of you who are fortunate enough to be able to get some farm eggs, maybe people that have some free-range chickens, most people will recognize that those eggs are much more yellow, much more orange, let's say, even, than some of the store eggs that where chickens, let's say, are eating a diet where they're not accessing free-range. So we know that a couple of different things. One, when you have eggs that are organic, they're going to be enriched with lutein and zeaxanthin. In some cases, there are people eating that are feeding lutein or zeaxanthin, and that's typically done using marigolds because the color, you know, the orange marigolds are probably the richest source that we have, and that's actually where it is commercially available for supplements. And but we also know, even though the amount of lutein and zeaxanthin in eggs is let's say less than we would see with kale or spinach or something like that, the bioavailability of this, because it's in fat, it's much higher.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a higher proportion of bioavailability of lutein zeaxanthin from egg or egg yolks than there is in the same amount that you would find, let's say, in kale or spinach. But there's a much more, let's say, in kale or spinach or Swiss chard or these kinds of things than you'd get. And of course, interestingly, when you cook them, in the case of kale or spinach especially, when you cook kale or spinach, you release more of the lutein zeaxanthin than you would. But also, if you think about it, so if you take a pile of spinach, and you know how much it cooks down, so if you're taking raw spinach, you're not eating as much as you think you are when it's raw, and when you cook it down, you know, it just shrinks down to nothing. So that's one of the reasons why there's a difference between the cooked form, which has a lot more per cup than the raw form.
Yeah, and that's very interesting, especially to raw foods enthusiasts who tell us that, you know, all the goodness in the foods is destroyed when you cook foods. And it turns out in this case that these valuable high supportive nutrients are actually concentrated when you cook. And especially, you know, perhaps if you take collard greens, for example, and as I do, I first steam them a little bit, or you know, put them in the steamer, don't submerge them in the water, and then take a little bit of olive oil, or in some cases leftover bacon grease, make them Southern style. You actually can, with the fat present, you actually liberate more of the of these fat soluble nutrients.
Right, and yeah, so we've known for a long time that carotenoids in particular are enhanced, their bioavailability is enhanced when you combine them with you know, olive oil or any kind of oil for that matter, but even like lycopene, which is another carotenoid from tomatoes, when you cook that with olive oil, like they typically do to make tomato sauce, you greatly enhance its a bioavailability of its absorption compared to when you just try to take it by itself.
Okay, so clearly there's a lot of suggestion that antioxidant nutrients, omega-3 fatty acids, in particular DHA, and lutein and zeaxanthin ought to be good for the eyes. So our listeners know that we divide these podcasts into two parts. We've laid the groundwork for a discussion of eye nutrition, specifically against macular degeneration. And in part two, we're going to focus in on what does the evidence say? Actually, this is actually one of the best researched areas in clinical nutrition because the research has been done. And the supplements have been proven efficacious against macular degeneration. We're going to share that information with you with today's guest, Dr. Thomas Williams. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.